What's up, humans? Welcome to the Human Music Podcast. I'm Luke Rain. My co-hosts are Tesco and Rip Kinney, and we are all music producers, artists, and producer coaches. This show is where we discuss all things music production and interview amazing creatives about their origins, their process, and whatever else comes up. This week is episode 120, Unknown Player on Show Promotion. Unknown Player is a Seattle-based DJ and promoter who has started quite a few music weekly nights. We discuss how he got into electronic music, how he began to promote music events, the importance of being present and consistent, how promoting led to getting DJ gigs, being direct when leaving business relationships that don't work, having the hard conversations in a kind way, starting his own weekly music events, his passion for getting exposure to smaller name artists, how to keep enjoying the work that you're doing, working at the Any Patch of Grass Festival, stepping into music management, and trusting your intuition while moving through the music industry. Follow him at AKA Unknown Player on Instagram, at Rupert's Rambles on Facebook and Twitter, and at 5KMusic206 as well for his company. Song of the week, this one is Luke Rain and Porch, Spice It Up. You can check the links to that below or find it on the Human Music Podcast Song of the Week playlist. And please support our sponsors while you're down there. The first one is the Spice It Up Percussion and Foley Pack. That's over 2,000 percussion loops and one shots from Luke Rain and Porch, along with 50 rack instruments to get your percussion spicy. Dojo TV, where you can get free producer live stream classes from the Dojo Senseis. Tesco's Patreon, where you can get access to his educational content like track feedback, private lessons, and more. The weekly download, where you can learn from our mentor Ill Gates and his private weekly group lessons and get access to almost 300 more episodes in the archive for just $20 a month. And guest practices, where you can learn from Seth Drake at the Approach Institute. He's the best engineer we know, and your first class is free. Check us out over there at thehumanmusicpodcast.com for all those links as well. And, you know, let's get on into this episode.
Hello, people of Earth. This is Tesco with Rip Kinney and Trap Jesus, and you're listening to the Human Music Podcast. Woo!
Human Music Podcast. I like it.
What's up, humans?
Let's go.
All right. Back again. Human Music Podcast. You know us, and we are here with a special guest.
The specialist.
Oh, yeah. Our guy, Robert Reyes, a.k.a. Rupert, a.k.a. Unknown Player, here to join us. I've had the pleasure of meeting this guy at the Any Patch of Grass Festival, friend of Rip Kinney's, and...
Family.
Family.
Woo. We fam.
Yeah. Fam. Squad.
so much so that, like, when you ran into him at APOG and we, like, realized we should have him on the podcast, I was like, what have I been doing my entire life? This should have happened so long ago.
Yeah, man. But here we are now in perfect timing, all here. And, you know, we start every interview off, Rob, by asking, what is your superhero origin story? How did you become the dope creative that you are today?
Oh, man. Yeah, so I guess that starts, like, pretty early on. My mom, she had me when she was, like, 16. So I grew up fast. And then I had a sister that was 5 years after me. So mom was 22, 23 when she had her. And single parent. So that kind of set my barometer for BS really low. Like, I don't put up with a lot. I've always had to be on top of my own stuff and be on top of other people's stuff, because I'm looking after my little sister. So it's just, like, from a very early age, like, I've had these principles and had certain values that I hold close to me and expect, not that exact level of commitment to those things, but some respect for that from the people that I surround myself with.
Word up.
Yeah, so that's kind of like the very beginning. And obviously, like, music's always been really, really, really important to me and been a really big part of my life throughout my life, whether it was singing in the car with the family on road trips or getting to experience new sounds. Ultimately, I found electronic music around my freshman year of college, and that was kind of like a really pivotal time in my life where I was starting to like doubt who I was myself, all of these things that you experience your freshman year of college. And finding music kind of like pushed me through this dark period. I was able to find something that I connected with. And when I came back to Seattle, found spaces where I could enjoy those things, and slowly figured out that there's people doing a lot of work behind the scenes to make that stuff happen. So that's kind of where I found myself wanting to contribute, wanting to participate, wanting to give back, and slowly have kind of made myself a leader in the Seattle community. And people come to me and ask for guidance. They come to me and ask how things should be done, and been able to kind of make a pretty good name for myself out here.
Man, that's amazing. Yeah. I'm curious, what was like your first like memory? Like, was it a first song you heard? Was it like a first party you were at where they're playing that stuff? Like,
I always listen to music in my room and stuff. And SoundCloud, I was on SoundCloud pretty early. Evan knows about the group that we're in, EM83 right now currently, but it's basically a music group where people share stuff. And I never really like vibed with what people were sharing, so I didn't spend a lot of time in it. But DJ Complexion has a show called Future Beats Show. Mm-hmm. And he's on episode like 360 something now. And he doesn't do it like on a regular interval. It's kind of like as it happens. But he was still in the hundreds when I found it. So that was definitely the first person. And I always, people say, how do you get into electronic music? It's DJ Complexion, Future Beats Show. And it's like this weird, I call it ulterior beats, because it doesn't quite fit within any parameters. And there's lots of sounds that can be encapsulated within it. But it's something that tied my growing up with a young mom who listened to hip hop and R&B with these new sounds that I could, that made me feel good. So that is this mesh point. And since then I've gravitated more into the house realm, but that was the first.
So did you just like stumble across it like randomly on shuffle, or did like someone put you on? Yeah. You're just like, chilling in your room one night.
I was,
night and just
it, I was like, what the hell is like, this is it.
That's damn, what a serendipitous moment for real.
The pure organic come ups on music that you enjoy are the best. So I can personally vouch for this guy, having seen him come into the Seattle scene and build exactly what he said, a pretty notable repute for being someone that knows what the hell they're doing. But one thing I admire about what you did is that it was from the ground up. And you learned it by doing. And I would love for if you just, you know, talk for a little bit about the nights you've started, the parties, the weeklies, all of that. And kind of start to finish from where you started to what you're doing now.
Yeah. So oddly enough, like no one ever meets you and they're like, oh, yeah, you'd be really good at throwing parties. Here's a 1200 person capacity room. Go fill it. That doesn't happen. So like you said, Evan, it's like you got to figure out how things work and who to talk to and who's doing things. And I think when I moved back, because I graduated like 2015 from the University of Arizona, which is where I learned how to party. they did a really good job. Everyone gets a degree in partying from there. When I moved back in 2015 after graduating, Michael Bell, who you also should know, Evan, was kind of like my introduction into the Seattle scene, because he's fairly involved. He went to UW, so he didn't leave for college. And he kind of brought me in, took me to the Forward Wednesdays, the Forums, like those a little bit off the beaten path music, and got me hooked, honestly, on like the community and the scene that is existing there currently. And so I started, like everyone should start, if you're going to be in the music scene, like promoting and just being hanging up posters on a Thursday before the Friday shows, or on Wednesday before the Thursday shows, and just doing as much as I could, sending the invites, making the annoying posts on Facebook, doing all of those things that they want you to do to show that you're willing to do the minimum. And it never felt forced. I found a way to stay true to myself in that. And I think it served me really well and helped me reach a lot more people than I would have if it felt fake. It's like, I'll post, there was a period of time where I was doing five nights a week, being a part of five nights a week on a weekly basis. So
savage.
It's savage. Like, if I'm announcing things, 2, 3, 4 things a day, it's like, that gets old for people. But I found a way to not, and it was just like, I wouldn't force anything. Just, I had wait a day for an announcement that I was a part of if it didn't feel good, and just talk about it when it felt right. And that's, mm-hmm. that served me really well over time.
Yeah. I think something that like I struggled with when I was doing that, and I think everyone that is in like a promoting like setting struggles with, is exactly what you just said. Like, being authentic with like a post that is not the same, but like it's a post to hype up the night. And like, even if you're just promoting one night a week, like your post can get kind of, you know, for a lot of people, it just starts to feel a little stale, a little copy paste. Like, can I ask, like, is it just you, like, just not forcing it, and then you had a thought about something interesting on the night, or are you just like the golden child of promo? Like, what?
So I really like words.
Yeah.
And words, like the words. So I have a few stories that like about words specifically, and like what the reason they're so important is because it's like there's a definition of a word, right? And then there's my personal understanding of what that word means, which is could be the same as the definition or could be slightly different than the definition. Mm-hmm. And how I use it in the way that I talk is going to be different than the way that Luke uses it. And then it's going to be the way that Tesco uses it. And it's going to be different than the way that Evan uses it. And it's really important to understand that when you're communicating with people. So I can say the same thing in 5 different posts and use words that mean the same stuff, but not be using the same words. And so it's like, from very early on, I was always reading as a kid, I'd get yelled at in school for like being the weird kid reading in class. And it was just like books I liked at the time. It was mostly like the Redwall series and things like that.
Yeah. Fantasy. How dare you read in school? It's not the point. Yeah,
but it's like, I could be doing worse things for sure. But it's just like, that love for words and expression through words, especially written. I don't like talking in front of people for the most part, as far as groups or strangers.
Well, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah. like groups of 4 and smaller, I feel really comfortable in. If it hits that 5 number, which for me is, I figured it out that if I'm with a group of 5, I participate a lot less in interactions in a group. So when I'm hanging out with my friends, I try to keep it below that. Which is another tactic.
I like that. I mean, for me, I would consider myself an introvert that is an extrovert around close friends. And so I definitely understand what you're saying there. Like, it is when the group becomes too big, like I just become a ghost.
Yeah,
like, for sure.
I sit there. I nod. I shake my head. Yeah. That's basically it. Yeah.
Think I have an interesting quip, and then it just like silences everyone around. I'm like, okay, I'm not talking for the rest of my life.
So. Yeah, that will happen sometimes, but you know, first, you know, try again. Or like you did, you get that self-awareness of like, oh, you know what? This is my type of social situation, so I'm going to gravitate to those. I like that. That's like, that shows some good growth and self-awareness.
Yeah. And it's a lot of awareness too on like, just to pick up like how words are going to affect different people, and to like use, you know, your passion for words as a way to connect with more people and bring people together. Like, that's super inspiring for me too, because a lot of people that get into promotion, at least from what I've seen, have like a me kind of approach to it. It's like, come out for me, come out because I need to sell tickets and all that. And it's like, it just heartwarming to hear that, like, you're actually reaching out to the people and speaking to them as they wish to be spoken to. I know it's a foreign concept, but that brought people together. Like, yeah. It's that simple.
Yeah, it still does.
Yeah, yeah.
Tried and true. So you, you know, started promoting, and let's continue with that story thread.
So it's just, I start promoting. People start to realize that I'm like a really good promoter for those reasons that we just talked about. Mm-hmm. I'm not doing what everyone else is doing. I'm doing stuff that feels good. I'm at everything. Like literally 4-5 nights a week.
Take notes, people. You got to show up
Tuesday to Sunday. Like it was, like, so that's 6 days actually. So, so it's just like, and slowly people start to like, see if they can trust you and see if they can give you something small to do and if they'll do it and how, what your attitude is and how well you do it. And just over time, there's just like every opportunity I got, I just do the best that I could every single time, always do it no matter what it was. Like I'll go hang posters, I'll stay till close to make sure that stuff gets wrapped up. I'll pack up the gear. I'll carry the stuff. Like, and just, I haven't stopped doing that. So it's just like, people know what they're going to get when they work with you. And that's led to a lot of opportunities. I didn't start DJing until I was promoting for like a couple of years. So it's like, I was learning how to DJ during the first couple of years of my time in the scene. And like, I love music. So I feel like anyone that loves music, like a natural progression is to eventually get into DJing. Like everyone should DJ or know how to DJ if you love music, because then the music never has to stop. And that's the really cool thing to me, is that anyone can learn how to do that pretty simply. Like mixing a track into the next track is not like, it's not that hard at the end of the day. And like, I don't do a ton of production. And I've gotten to be a pretty good DJ. I would just now consider myself a pretty good DJ after the 6 years that I've been doing it. But it's like, you don't have to be good at first. Just keep working at it. And so I've been DJing more the past few years. But events is definitely where it's at for me, and creating spaces for people. So my first, I think, promotion opportunity was at Q for Heavy, which was a night by Scott McKinnon, who's Ainsley, and he's got releases on like, what's Astronomar's label?
Nightbase?
No, it's not Nightbase. It's, I digress. So Ainsley was the first person to give me a promotion opportunity. I promoted for Work, which was Zan Lucero's group. And it kind of just like, I moved from group to group, kind of got burned a couple times, not by the Heavy crew. But just like, you have some experiences where you're like, I don't know if that felt good. I don't know if I want to continue to be a part of this system. Mm-hmm. That's kind of like more or less taking advantage of people for its own success. And like, that doesn't feel good. So I would find places where it felt good to contribute and it felt good to be involved. And my knowledge of what was going on would evolve every time I got exposed to a new group. And it was bass music. It was, most people don't notice, the first night that I ever threw was with Michael Bell, and it was bass music. And so that was like, I'm known for house music stuff now, but it's like, that's not my music. What I like is not limited to any one thing. And I like the nights that feel the best to me, or when there's a growth and transition throughout the night and progression through sounds, that those nights are the coolest to me. Being able to do that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you can only listen to house music for so long, you know?
me, for sure.
You can only listen to anything for so long. But it is cool that I'm like, obviously they're starting to materialize a thread in what you're saying, which is like authenticity. Like both in what you do and what the night is that you're contributing to, the people around you, like that authenticity, you see it. And for someone like yourself who has it, like it is amplified being around people and an event that it truly is, you know, authentic as well. And it's really tough to like cut ties from something that you've put work into, especially in the promo field, because I think for a lot of people, it's like, oh, I've put so much work into promoing for this and getting up this ladder to where I could probably play now. And then like, if all of a sudden like that isn't the thing anymore, like I think a lot of people struggle with pivoting into something like from that point. So kudos on that. It sounds like having a lot on your plate promo wise might have been a benefit as well, because you could just focus in the ones that you were enjoying.
At first it was just like, I'm young, I don't need to sleep, like I can do all of this. And it's just like, I worked a full-time job while in college and going to school full-time and starting a fraternity. So it's like, I was used to just go. And so after school ended, I just carried it. And instead of, I had full-time work 40 hours a week, and then I needed something to fill that extra space, 'cause I didn't know what else to do with myself. And so music filled that space for me, and music is what kept me sane, because if I was not keeping myself busy, all the thoughts that I didn't know how to control, all the negative stuff in my brain that I didn't know how to control at the time, it would just go. And so music would occupy that empty period where those things could come in. And it did. It like I would 4 or 5 nights, sometimes 6 nights a week, doing stuff. And you're absolutely right, it's like a lot easier to let go of something if you know you got 5 other things to do. But it didn't make it easier, like relationship wise it's like you're still essentially breaking up with someone,
of course,
who's the leader of the group. It's like, hey, this isn't working for me, and this is why. It's not me, it's you.
Yeah, I absolutely love that, man. You kind of mentioned that a second ago, like feeling out these different situations, like, okay, I'll work with this, and then feeling into yourself and be like, yo, why isn't this working? How do I feel about this? Is this working? What do I like? What don't I like? And being willing to not only A, leave a situation that's not working for you, but B, like clearly, directly communicate why. I think that's really admirable and a valuable skill that I think everybody could benefit from practicing. It's like listening to your own intuition on whether or not the situation really is aligned for you, and then clearly communicating your boundaries with things. Like, that's big ups for that.
And what it's done for me is it's like I don't have bad blood with anyone. It's preserved the relationship side of things, where I don't have to work with someone to still be their friend. And it's made it so that they know why I'm not a part of their brand, their night, whatever it is. It's just like, I'm not going to do things this way, and it's made me figure out my system better. And now I'm the common denominator in all the things I'm a part of. So if there's something I don't like, then it's like, okay, what? I have my emotional reactions as a human being. And what that does is it makes me react a certain way and want to push something away, but it's my thing now. So I can't push it away, and I have to figure out what is the actual issue. And I figured out that most of the time it's a lack of me communicating the impact that someone else is having on me in my system and holding on to it to a point where it hurts. Wow. And then I don't want to be a part of it anymore. And I instead can't push it away anymore. I can't go to something else anymore because it's mine. So I have to figure out a way to communicate that. Hey, if you want to be a part of this, this is what it looks like, and it's done really good things.
Amen. Yeah, I highly relate to that.
It's such a big brain move. I mean, having a high EQ is something that, like, I mean, we actually just talked about this on last week, but we gotta double down on it, because
important stuff.
People that have a high EQ are actually quite rare, and it is one of those things that like seems obvious, but takes courage that like most people that like have, you know, that think they have an IQ, but it doesn't actually get put into practice, because understanding the situation and having the courage to like actually tell someone face to face, like, look, this is why it's not working. Like, no one does that. Everyone just would prefer to bitch their friends about the shit that's not right. And then it just continues. And then they continue bitching about it. And the fact that you're like actually cutting it off and like being honest, like, not only does it help you and consolidate where you need to put your focus, but that person is going to appreciate it too, because most people just live in their own world and they don't really know, you know, they have all these inputs, but no one ever actually gives them the full story. So then when they get it, it's like, you know, they might be mad at first.
Usually,
but down the road, they're going to A, respect you for it, and B, appreciate the fact that you let them know what a lot of other people are probably also thinking.
Yeah. I'm still friends with every single person that I've had one of those conversations with. And I would say that I'm better friends now because of those conversations.
Dude,
so it's like, I totally believe it.
That's crazy.
You're doing your friends a disservice if you're not addressing the things that piss you off. If you don't have those conversations, you're never going to grow as individuals or together in relationships.
Yeah, I can think of moments in my past where a friend took me aside and was like, hey, this thing you're doing is not working for people. Yeah. I want you to be aware of it. Like, did it with kindness and directness. And like, looking back, it's like, even though it kind of hurt in the moment to hear it, it was like, oh my God, now I get to work on this. Now I get to like see myself better and understand how to be a social person better. Like, so valuable. Such a kindness.
Mm-hmm. Something I think about a lot is like, they had this study where they found that like, people are way more likely to be hurt and offended and have a negative reaction towards something if it breaks their expectation versus if it's actually a negative thing, but it matches with what they expect out of the situation. So
interesting.
That makes total sense.
We all have narratives that we create in our head of what we think our reality is. And anytime that someone says something that is contradictory to our self-narrative, and I experience this with people close to me a lot because they think that I'm in their head and I know what's going on with their thoughts and what they think the plans are and all this. So when I can actually communicate my plans, my intentions, because I like to think that I'm a really good communicator and I share information that people need to be successful. When I share that information and there's a misalignment, I see the most hurt and I see the most frustration in that when I'm telling them something than when I'm telling them like bad news, for instance, like you said, something negative. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And it makes total sense too. Like, I just see this reoccurring theme as you keep talking, like, you know, be the guy that helps set up, tear down, be reliable, know what people can expect, having those conversations with friends, and it ends up strengthening the relationship contrary to what you might expect. It's like, I feel like that's just a common theme. Like, you seem like you have a really reliable personality and you hold these values really dearly that helps people know that they can trust on you. And that's, I think, probably a big reason for the longevity that you've had so far as just continuously scaling it up.
Yeah, I didn't know what it was for a long time. And I read a book, actually my regional director for the last place I worked, I quit like a few months ago because I couldn't stand the work itself anymore.
Congratulations.
But, yeah, it was a great, great call. The book is called Relentless, and it's by Tim Grover, who's the guy that was the physical trainer for like Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, like all these world-class athletes. And he divides people into three categories. The first is like the person that needs to be directed all the time, needs instructions, is only going to do what he's told, bare minimum, all that stuff. And then there's the second kind of person. He's referencing athletes, but I think it applies more broadly. And it's the clutch performer, the person that's going to come in big when it matters, when things are on the line, when the pressure's on, all of those scenarios. But they're not going to do much outside of that time. And then there's cleaners, which are what Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant and all those people were. And the cleaners are the people that show up first. They do all the little things. They're there last, and they clean up after, and they do all that stuff. in between. So it's like that I had been living my life that way for so long that seeing it in words on paper, which I love, that really like just cemented it. Like, that's the person that I want to be in my life consistently, every day, every week. And it like you're saying, it's like, it's bedrock that I can build my life on. It's like, yeah, that's the foundation for what I do, is this is where you're going to get. And then I can do all this other stuff on top of that.
I think
it's a really good metaphor
in the music industry, especially. It's rare to have cleaners. It's rare. Like, most people are assuming they're clutch performers because they want to like be the guy when it's their time to shine, but they're not, especially in like a promotion and like events sense, like they're not there to do all the dirty work. Like, almost no one is. And so I think that again, that just, you know, contributes to why you've, you know, become such a force in the scene. So I want to make sure we get through all of the nights that you've started. Yeah. Let's just like start to finish, just like list them off, what they were like, maybe something you learned or interesting about it.
Okay. So the actual things that I started that were mine. So Subversion was the first one, and that was with Michael Bell. I mentioned that briefly already, and that was bass or like UK sounds, like grime, bassline, that stuff. And then after that, I joined Studio 44, which is the big house crew up here. I was a part of Field Trip for a period of time. And then I started I created a brand called SOS for Studio 44, which got used one time. Spent like 3 months building it. It got used one time. And that was kind of like a lesson and keep your best ideas for yourself kind of thing. And so that was a big one. I did the Afters, which you actually played the opening night of, and it was Wednesday night at this place called Club Contour in Seattle, which is basically Pioneer Square. Capacity is like 220 people, and I think we had a line like down the block the first night. I've never seen the place have so many people in it. And it was just like, that was the summer. Slo-Fi was another night that happened that summer with Sean Majors at his bar Justice, which was a speakeasy, which was really cool.
God, that place was cool.
It was cool to be part of that. Yeah. So that was both the same summers. The guy that owns Contour calls me Kingpin now, because it was like such a successful night throughout the whole summer. And that's just how he refers to me now. He hasn't said my name in like 5 years. so that I really, really well. The funny thing is about that one is I actually turned him down twice before saying yes to that night, because I didn't want to. I had our Tuesday already, and I was doing Thursdays already and Fridays already, so I didn't want to add Wednesday.
Let's remember everything that he just listed is weekly.
Yeah. So all those things were every week. And then I think I took a little break from like actually starting my own stuff, but in the past couple of years I launched 5K, which is my another one of those instances where I was told no. I told no a lot when I was trying to get people booked in Seattle. So Studio 44 was telling me no, these people aren't big enough to draw a crowd and wouldn't be successful in our market. Same thing with Q, they're telling me no, these people aren't big enough, they're not going to do good on our market. And I had like a weird moment of, I know how to do all this stuff. I've been doing it for other people. I'm running all these other parties for people on a weekly basis, and I can have relationships with venues now because they see me doing the work every week. So I just asked Kremwerk, Nick Carroll at the time, hey, can I do my own night? Like, would that be okay? I have this long list of 250 something artists that I want to bring to Seattle, and no one will let me bring them, but I know they're going to do great. And we seem to have like a really solid relationship with me working with you guys. I would love to do something. So the first person I bring to Seattle, January 2020, was John Summit. And it was right before he released Deep End and Thin Line and all those things. So it was like 3 months before that. So John Summit comes, I put almost 400 people through a 110 capacity room
on, a, small,
on a Friday. And it's just like 5K did really well after that. I have 5Ks moved a couple of times. And I have CAB, which is a group of us. And we do various things. It's basically all the people that were part of the No Signal stuff that actually did the lights, and the creative projection and all of these aspects. And I kind of just make sure that everyone's on the same page and get opportunities. So we did an event at Contour called Incorporated, and that was with the CAB group, very successful again. And it was, we transformed the space. So everything we do with CAB, and we want it to feel like it's not the place that we're throwing it in. So we go really heavy. We book, we mostly play ourselves so that we have a bigger budget to put towards bringing in light, bringing in art installations, artists from the community. We always have like a physical artist that brings art to sell. We had a live painter that one. And so I'm super proud of the CAB group and what they've been doing and like bringing art back into what we're doing as a scene. And we had our own space for about a year. We only threw a couple of events in there before we got told we can't do that anymore because it was like this partly unfinished basement, very, very, very underground vibe. It's in a basement, 3,000 square feet. We would just fill it with art. I think I did six art installations both times. Booked full night of DJs and just kept it really small. I think it was between 140 and 200 people each time, and hard cap. No walk-ups, nothing like that. If you didn't get on our list, you weren't able to come. And so that was Nothing Else Matters, which that concept was built around a night where I went over to a friend's for an after party and did some late night Molly and just couldn't sleep afterwards. And the ideas were just rolling. And so I got up like 6 or 7 times to go write my notepad, a little notepad of ideas. I wrote in my notepad and like was able to boil down that 4 hours of thoughts into a concept eventually. And it's like Nothing Else Matters. Sounds kind of negative at first, but my spin on it was that nothing matters besides what you put emphasis on, what is important to you. At its core value, nothing matters. Like there's no inherent value in my Leatherman or in my computer until I decide that it matters. So these are the things that matter to us. Good people, good art, good music, safe space. And we built around that. And it was really, really impactful.
Dude, I don't think most people understand how difficult it is to take ideas and then cohese them into an actual thing. Yeah. And then also have a title that succinctly describes what you're trying to do. Like that, it's so hard. And the fact that you have been able to like do it multiple times, like I just like, and some of these, like since I left Seattle, I haven't even really kept up to date with a lot of these things. And god damn, dude.
So they got a couple more. There's Catch the Vibe was at Q, and that was all about like, hey, there's a lot of things going on. There's a lot of the same stuff. Here's some new inspiration, some new energies, some new vibe. So come catch the vibe, catch our vibe, catch the vibe. And that's kind of where that came from. And I did that with Jason Wu. And he was very much the visually, like he did an amazing job with the art on that. And we kind of built that one together. And it ended up, he's really busy with Studio 44, so it ends up kind of going away after a couple events, but it was exactly what we wanted it to be. So that's a success in my books. I got to bring a couple more artists to Seattle for the first time, which is always my goal. It's like, if I'm booking someone up here, it's either going to be someone that I brought previously or someone that hasn't played here before, and make sure that Seattle keeps getting fresh faces. 'Cause I don't want to be that person that books the same 6 artists twice a year and just happy with that. And then Habitat, that's a group of us under the Studio 44 umbrella, but Habitat is, I very, very much feel ownership of that as a project and the concept. And it's deep melodic minimal house music, but I really pushed hard to strip it down. We don't announce a lineup ever. And we only have a resident DJ and a guest DJ, and we don't do set times either. So it's like you two are the ones that are playing. The resident usually has some input on who they're playing with, and they kind of figure out how they're going to structure the night, whether it's switching off every so minutes, but it's not like a structure that they have to fit in. And that was a hard sell to the group. We're not going to announce the DJs that are playing our DJ night. That was really hard for people. Yeah.
Visionary.
I died on that hill though. And I was like, this is happening. It took a lot of convincing and eventually got down to like, why can't it work? Tell me why it can't work. Don't tell me why I shouldn't have to convince you why it's going to work, because you're the ones that are doubting that it would work. Like, yeah. I fully believe in this.
Like, it's so smart though, because like someone like yourself who runs things with authenticity and attracts the right people. Like, if you run a night that is always quality and you don't announce a lineup, there's no reason to go or not to go. You're just going to be there every week. And like, I really admire that idea. There's something special about it.
It's been really impactful. Like, in hindsight, everyone says they love it and they love that we're doing it.
Of course.
But if you would have had a poll of the Seattle nightlife, it was like, would a night be successful if it didn't announce the DJs prior to this? Like, there's no way that anyone would have said yes.
Mm-mm. Of course. I mean, yeah, you have to look past all of that and see, like you said, the value in that. It's like everybody's looking at the outward things that kind of look like they have value, or the tried and true thing, you know? Not that those other nights don't have value too, but it's like you immediately stand out from not doing what's going on the other four nights.
Yeah. And setting that like consistent vibe of like, yo, this is going to be this type of night. This is for this community and this scene. When it's like really truly for the community of people who love this music, it makes sense to me that like they would just keep showing up and be like, yo, I trust.
That's another Wednesday night. So that's midweek.
Yeah. There you go.
Well, every week. Yeah.
Yeah.
So how many events are we talking here that you've started? Because I definitely in the multitude lost count.
More than 10. Lot.
I didn't count either. Yeah. Nice. It's a good amount. I would say I've probably started like close to 10. Of my own concepts at this point, with a partner, with like another group at 5K is the one that's like, that's singularly mine. No one else was a founder of that. Most of the other things I usually try to involve someone, whether it's someone that was like, hey, I would really like to throw a party sometime and I don't know what to do. And so that's what the afters was. It was my buddy. He's like, I want to throw a night with you. I want to throw a night. And I don't know what to do. And so he kind of had some graphic design skills. So I was like, okay, I don't have Photoshop. So you handle the graphic design. I'll do the other 95% of this. And we can split this 50-50. And I feel good about that because you're going to learn these other things. And I can kind of shift some of those items to you. By the end, he was like helping with booking and everything. So if people want it and they are willing to do what they can to begin with and take on more as they learn, I'm always down to help people grow and get involved.
Amen. What have you seen like when working with people, like what do you look for in those folks that like you're given that chance to come along? Like, you know, you talked about the things that you embodied, to make an impact and get invited back to things. What do you look for in people where you're like, man, I'll give you a chance?
Yeah, I try not to like, there's, that's a really good question. Cause it's like not consistent. I'm definitely not consistent in the way that I decide at all. And for some people it's like, I have a good friendship with them and they're asking to be a part of something where I've known them for a long time and they're asking to do something. And it's like, okay, I'll give you a shot, even though like I see these other things that I wouldn't necessarily let fly if it was someone that was brand new to me. And on the other side of the spectrum, if it's someone that's like brand new to me, I almost never say yes anymore. I have like I haven't talked about this much, but I have like a 6-month rule on when I meet someone and when I'll actually book them or involve them in anything I'm doing, because I've had some people that I've brought in really quickly and given them a lot of access to me and the relationships that I've built and things that I'm a part of, and they do some really, really bad shit. And then it's like, okay, have one of those hard conversations. This is why you're not going to be allowed at my events anymore. This is why I don't want you involving yourself in this community, and had to like draw that hard line, which they respected for a period. They actually don't live in Seattle anymore, but it's just like, I gotta know what you're about and know that you're not just lying to tell me what you think I want to hear.
Yeah.
People do a lot of that. So it's a combination of, there's there's like a 6 month window where I just don't say yes to people I don't know. And then if it's people that I do know out beyond that, then it's, they gotta have something that I don't have, that I don't already have. Right. So, there's, at this point, it's getting harder to use that as a barometer, because I have access to a lot more than I did when I was beginning. But you got to have something that's going to add to what I'm doing already. Otherwise, I'll just do it by myself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Although at a certain point, when we're all wearing so many hats and we're doing so much, you know, I imagine it's nice to find somebody that like you can. Oh, if you're here, I can stop doing that because I trust that you're dope at that. Like,
yeah,
I imagine that has an effect.
You gotta be able to do something that I can't do. So it doesn't necessarily have to be something I can't do at all, but it's gotta be something that like you're better than me at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let them take that off your plate and free up your time for the things you're better at.
You got the light stuff handled. Go for it. Like, I don't have to worry about it. They'll still like, even when they're really, really good at what they do, they kind of still defer to me because of my presence and the foundation and consistency that I operate within just generally puts me in a leadership position. Cause I'm the only one that's there every time, no matter what, whatever else I got going on, I still like run my stuff. There's very, very, very few times when I've stepped away from that for personal reasons.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, because it seems like your goals aren't really rooted in like throwing bigger fests or getting more people in the door per se. I'd love to hear a little bit more about just like what's exciting you currently, what's your inspiration as far as future events, and like where are you looking to take it, like given if you had more resources and all this stuff and things continue to scale, like how do you want to put all of that to use in your vision?
Yeah, I've actually been thinking about that a lot lately, because it's like because at a certain point you have to scale up to do more cool shit. Like there's like a point in which I maximize the cool shit that I can do with the size that I'm doing it. And the bigger things get, I feel like a lot of times you lose some of the soul of things. Mm-hmm. And so it's my biggest thing that keeps me up at night currently is how do I keep my whole soul and it let more people have access to it. And so like everything I do, I put as much of myself and my soul and my intention and my desire to make people feel comfortable and safe and enjoy it and maximize enjoyment, without losing that part. Like, how do I let people in without losing those things? And that is 100% the thing that I'm focusing on figuring out. And I think it's just slow and steady. I don't think you can ever like take a big jump in capacity and preserve that stuff. Like every time I watch something and I see something that's really, really good, and then they make a jump, it loses a part of itself. Mm-hmm. And I'm terrified of that happening to the things that I create. So for me, it's a long road and it's not going to happen fast. And I feel pretty good about that. I'm a patient person. So I tell Monkey Loft is the place that I just moved 5K. And it was like probably a year after talking to him about doing events and proposing some concepts and him being like, oh, I don't really have holds. It's like, don't worry about it. I'm a patient person. Like when it works, that's going to be the right time and I'm going to feel good about it and I'll be more prepared. So I'm just steadily growing what I have in front of me. Becoming a part of things that are bigger than me that I feel good about is a way that I have sped that up a little bit. Mm-hmm. APOG is bigger. APOG, which is Any Patch of Grass, which is where I actually met Luke. So that is something that's bigger than anything that I've taken on previously. And I started just as a DJ the first year that they did it. Second year, also just DJed. Third year, we did a stage with the cab group. And the fourth year, we did the stage again. They asked us to come back and do the stage again. And then just after this past fourth year, they actually asked me to be a part of their actual team. So I'm now officially a part of that group of people that throws that event. And it felt really good. The funny part was like, Rob, you're nothing that you do is really going to change. You're just officially a part of us now because of what I was doing previously. So that felt really good. And I think becoming part of something that's bigger than you, that you feel good about is what is going to help me continue to grow and get my things, my projects, my small things to consistently grow. Like 5K, I don't think there's ever a place where 5K is filling a 1,000-person room, but it's not for that. It's for exposing people to a smaller artist. Maybe, who knows, maybe at one point the 5K is just like the brand itself will carry enough weight to get 1,000 people into a space for someone that no one knows. But I don't see that. And I'm a fairly creative person with my words and wanting to create spaces. So I think some things are going to go away as time carries on and something else is going to replace it as I move forward. And hopefully it's better versions consistently. It's my goal. I don't want to, there's no back steps so far.
Yeah. Well, as far as creative events to build that are bigger than you and be a part of that team, we actually did a whole podcast on APOG when I got back from it. Luke was there the first year when I was playing there as well. And
third year last year.
Yeah. We were there for the third year and we were just gushing about how good an event it is. And really that's super fucking cool. Tesco, were you going to say something?
I think it escaped me, but continue.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you, so we've talked a lot about events that you've run, that you've been a part of, you know, that you've learned from. How does DJing fit in to all of this? Is it a focus to be a DJ at these events, or is it just something that happens naturally? How does that puzzle piece fit into all this?
So I love DJing. I love sharing music, and that's really what it is for me. It's because like I have somehow organically just consistently found these little artists with 200 plays on their track, and just like finding that and knowing that there's only 200 other people in the whole world that have listened to that. That's where I get off DJing, is like that little reach stuff. So there's a lot of times where I'm playing and people are trying to Shazam stuff and it's like, I can't Shazam this. What is it? Like that realm for me DJing is like, I want to be a tastemaker. If I'm DJing, I don't really care if like everyone knows the songs that I'm playing or if everyone's singing along. I want people to like lose control of their bodies to the rhythms that they've never heard before. So like I have this quote that I keep up on my music pages, and it's, music is a safe place. It's the escape. Music is a safe place. It's the escape. Let me guide the way. And so it's, for me, it's, if I'm DJing, a lot of times I don't remember what happened and I let myself be vulnerable and I let myself find the things for the moments. And I'm really, really locked in with the people in front of me. So that I can't get caught up in like remembering the songs that I played or anything. I can't remember what happened. I get done and I hyperventilate and then like have to get fresh air and I can't talk to people because I'm like so emotional. Like I've let so much of myself out in that. And so where it fits in, a lot of times I'll put myself between two people that are like a huge, huge gap in music selections, because I know I can make it make sense and get there. So I'll do that sometimes. Sets or like a set time that's like not ideal, I'll put myself into that, like 3 to 4 a.m. at a club. It's like they're not serving booze. Dance floor is probably getting pretty low. I'm not going to put someone there unless I know they're going to crush it and keep people around. And then doing events, everyone wants to play my events. Everyone wants to play that little event with the cool art or the big sound system or the Renegade under the bridge, which is something I forgot. Limitless, we just started a Renegade series that's free shows with a group. It's a Fujin group. They're local too, but the guy built his own sound. It's like really cool.
Like straight up built his own speakers. Yeah. Like
that's sick.
They bang. Wow. Yeah. So that's another thing, but it's like people want to be a part of the things that I'm doing. So I never run out of bookings because people book me thinking that it's going to get them something, which is not how I particularly operate, but I'm like, I'll play your show still.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not that like tit for tat exchange, but that being said, if you like somebody and what they do and you want to book them, like that is a good way to begin a relationship and like see if you vibe with somebody and have a mutual benefit of exchange. I do dig that. It's kind of like the light and shadow sides of the same action. The light side being like, hey, I like this person, I want to help them out and see if we vibe, build a relationship. And the other one is the expectations of like, oh, that means I'll be owed something back.
I make it very clear, like, hey, like I want you to come be a part of this. It's not I'm trying to get anything from you, and vice versa. Like when I'm playing for something, really grateful, thank you for the opportunity. I don't know how this is like, I have one specific example and I can't think of the exact words because it was definitely a situation where someone was booking me and didn't outright say I expect to be booked as a result of me booking you, but like everything in what they were saying was communicating to me that this was a tit for tat situation. And like, I forget exactly what I said, but it's something along the lines of like, I know what you want from this engagement. I don't think that is the best way to go about it. I'm still happy to accept this, but if this is contingent on getting something else, I'm okay with also not taking this. So it's like, I don't want to owe people stuff. And I had someone early on in my promoter career that was like, I gave you a shot. You owe me this, that, blah, blah, blah. Especially when I started throwing my own events, they tried to like hang what they did for me over me. And at that point it's like, no, like get this. I did more for you in your events than I ever got back. You took advantage of me. I gave a lot and I don't regret it because I learned so much, but you don't get to then hold that over me as something that you did for me. Because the reason you wanted me was because I worked so hard, because I did this, because I did that. It's not like I didn't have value.
Yeah. That's a real interesting one. The people coming back after, especially after like being a person that takes advantage, being a taker, and then being like, yeah, but now you owe me. that's a fun dynamic. And I really like your, how you said like when you later you learned from that situation and you took that going forward and you could see, oh, I can tell this person wants this to be an exchange where they're trading something. And I'm just going to diffuse the situation before I accept the gig by being like, hey, I think I know what's going on here. This doesn't work for me. And if that's the only reason you're doing this, I'm totally cool stepping out of this. And
like, no hard feelings at all. Yeah.
That like beauty of like the total lack of need or desperation and being able to like really stand in your strength as a person and be like, hey, look, these are my values. This is where I draw my boundaries and I'm not going to cross them. And if that means I lose out on this opportunity, I'm totally willing to do that. Like, I think people can learn from that in so many types of situations. I feel like in the music industry, other places too, but it's so prevalent in the music industry where people will cross their own boundaries or get taken advantage of because they're so desperate for any opportunity. But you hear so many horror stories of people getting taken advantage of or signing away their rights to music or doing stuff without compensation or whatever the situation is, because they were so scared to miss an opportunity that they were willing to take an opportunity that was clearly damaging to them.
Yes. And on that note, DJs listening, do never play a DJ set without being compensated. Like, literally, do not do it. It's not going to help you. It's not going to help the people around you. It's literally just someone trying to get free work from you. There are exceptions to this. Really cool, creative, free shows where there's a lot of work going into it. People aren't making money. Yes, take that free gig. That's a dope one to be a part of. But if someone is charging for tickets, you should be paid.
Yeah, I was just kind of thinking of that exception as you were saying that. I was like, yeah. And also, this weekend, I'm playing my homie's Renegade show in the woods for his girlfriend's birthday because I love them both and I just want to play music
like,
with
there's
him.
There's special things that you part of. Like, there's special things that if you want to be a part of it, like, I don't get paid for the APOC stuff, but, like, there's nothing I wouldn't do for that group of people to, like, help them accomplish their mission. And they don't make any money because everything goes right back into APOC. And so it's like, they get the best sound, they get the coolest lights, and it's just like, I'll take like, you guys feed me a few times and like I'll be out there for a week and a half building. Like, that's totally cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, really feel into your intuition. It sounds like what you're saying about, like, back to that, like, about like why am I taking this gig? What is the point of this gig for the people who are running it? How does that affect me? You know, am I doing this to help a community situation, or am I being taken advantage of by somebody that can pay me but just doesn't want to?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's different, like, too.
It's not so black and white.
Yeah. It's a gray area. Yeah.
It is. It's an entire section of just gray and in all shades. There's actually no black and no white in this scenario. I mean, like, there's even nuance to, like, for instance, say you like the group of people and, like, they offered to pay you, but you want to, like, help contribute and build the night. Like you could turn that down and say, instead, because I'm a part of this team and I care, like, I want you guys to put that into the night as well. And, like, there's a difference, though, in that, like, we respect and value what you're trying to do, and you can return the favor. But yeah, if someone is like, we want you to build our night, but we don't have anything to give you, you can tell the there's no authenticity there. There's no, the intention feels bad.
Yeah, I think a really good example of this, actually, Evan, it's actually you, APOG 3. When I reached out originally, it was like, hey, I want you to play our stage. This is what it looks like. This is what we can do on just budget wise and what that looks like. I know where you're coming from Oregon, all of these things. And I was just, like, very transparent with the situation. And you said, Rob, I don't want your money. Find a way to get Shelby a ticket and we'll make it happen. And so it's like, that's a perfect example of what you just said.
Yeah. I mean, it was a total win-win. I mean, yeah. I wanted to be there anyway. Yeah. So I'm being honest, it was so fun.
Yeah.
But and yeah, you get to drop some beats at a cool ass stage in the woods, and your wife gets to hang out with you. What?
Yo, I thought that stage was super cool that year after we did it. And then, like, we did our year four stage and I was like, oh my gosh.
That's exactly my experience with it. I was like, wow, this is amazing. And then I saw it the next year. I'm like, damn, level up, level up, level up. And very happy that you still had that cool melty projection mapping on those trees.
That's not going anywhere. That is required.
Never needs to leave. My favorite visual in a festival that was full of my favorite visuals.
Dude, literally of any festival I've ever been to, that's the coolest thing I've ever seen at a festival. Like, what the fuck? It's so sick.
This year I stood and stared at that for like 20 minutes while I literally danced with the fern. Shouts out to Acid for that moment.
The funny part is, like, you didn't even have to be on Acid. You thought you were just staring at the projection mapping, doing Acid-like things on the trees. It's crazy.
I can't give away their secrets on that one, but they are the people that did that specific install in our group. They're like frustrated at how simple it is and how much more they would like to do, but it's like so impactful that we are like, they can't go anywhere now.
Well, yeah. Leave that, and then like the other thing you want to do. Well, you could do that too.
Yeah, do that on the other trees across the way. We'll see who likes what better. Trees. We'll see which one has more high kids staring at it at 2 a.m. It'll be like a little science experiment. We'll have some guys in lab coats standing behind a two-way mirror in the woods, writing on clipboards. Yeah. I would probably stand and watch that as well.
So we've talked about events, we've talked about DJing a little bit. There's one other thing that I know you recently got into that I want to touch on. The management side of things with the 5K. I know that's kind of a new thing, but like if I know a lot of people that are listening to this are aspiring producers and are probably curious about that process and kind of the ins and outs, and you know, if you just want to share how that's going, what it is, and like maybe some lessons learned or anything that, you know, might be beneficial to share.
Yeah. So it's been less than like four or five months since I took that step into some kind of management role.
Yeah.
And managing Tony H, who is very, very talented and is getting lots of opportunities without any effort and on my part. And I'll be the first person to say that, like he's named the things that he is doing. He's become a part of Space Yacht, all of these things. He runs his own label, two labels, basically, Late Night Munchies and Munchies After Dark. It's just, there's not very many people that I see in the world that I operate in and I have influence within that is working as hard as me and harder. Like this man works harder than me and is giving everything he has to becoming what he wants and not what he thinks he wants. He knows what he wants and he knows what he needs to do to get there and how much work it is. And he's doing it every day. And so like, I didn't have any desire to manage anyone until we were having a conversation and he was like, I need management and I need it. I got too much on my plate. And that's really what it was for me to want to take that step and manage someone and help someone be the best version of themselves and take some of the administrative stuff off their plate. So I've negotiated things for him and gotten him more, but it's very little of me actually getting him stuff. His name is pretty well known at this point in the music, the house music realm, which is like, I like to explain it as like, there's rock stars who are like every single person, every household knows who they are. Like Elton John, everyone knows who Elton John is. There's people like that level. It's like you're a household name. And then there's like big people in the house. And like, that's like a Carl Cox. And not everyone is going to know what a Carl Cox is, but everyone in house knows what Carl Cox. So that's the new, that's like the top of house, but it's still down here compared to Elton John. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, if Carl Cox is here and let's just say that, John Summit is like close to here. And then Tony H is like here somewhere, but he's still on the spectrum of like, there's a good chance that people know who he is. So it's like he's developed himself. He has his own brand. He has his own things that people know him for. And that's why he needed someone to take on responding to emails for him. And that's really what it is. That's my job. I respond to emails for him. And like I'll touch base with him on certain things that as I get to know him, like I need clarification on certain aspects and preferences. But as I get to know him better and better, I need less touch points with him. And I can work more autonomously and represent him because that's my job. It's not what does Rob want. It's not what Robert thinks Tony wants. It's like what's best for Tony.
Yeah.
And that's what a manager should be doing. They should be representing you. He pays me a very small percentage and I wanted to work for free for a little bit, but he wouldn't let me because I'm still figuring this out myself. Like what do I need to do to be a good manager? But he wouldn't let me do that. Which I ultimately respect a lot because I probably wouldn't let someone else do that either. So it's expanding their the audience that sees them. So I'm reaching out to people across the country in different clubs that may not be on his radar. So I'm doing like the cold call things for him, outside of the US as well. Just like shoot your shot, you know, kind of thing. It's like, you never know. Someone would be like, listen to the demo that we send them and be like, yeah, this is fire. Let's get them to Berlin. Yeah, it's like, yeah, like we never know what kind of stuff. It's like some of my coolest experiences. It's like, I just wrote an email and I wanted to see what they would say. Always never good. Never. It's always good to shoot your shot and like, yeah, be respectful, be humble, do all those things, but like know your value and ask for what you want.
Yeah.
And sometimes people say yes.
I learned a phrase back in the day, a closed mouth don't get fed.
the squeaky wheel gets oil.
Oh yeah, so man.
This other one that fits right in there with that.
Yeah, I like both those phrases a lot.
I think what you were originally asking for, like artists and producers that are coming up, it's like when would you need a manager? What is a manager supposed to do? It's like a manager is supposed to like preserve your brand and make sure you're not getting taken advantage of, and you're getting good deals, and people are respecting you. And they're sending contracts when they're supposed to be sending contracts. And like people, especially small artists, they'll get burned because all they have is a conversation on Instagram to go off of. It's like, get that stuff in email. What are the dates? I will not send Tony any place that does not have a contract, actual contract, and I'll write it myself if I have to. You can go Google like artists. Agreement. If you go Google artist agreement, you can get a boilerplate and you can change whatever you want. And like most people don't even read, most of the venues won't even actually read what I send. And I know that for a fact because I've been on the other side as a promoter. Like I skim that stuff real quick, make sure that everything looks okay. And that I'm not like a lawyer. I don't know what to look for as far as like what wording is bad for me. Like I happen to like words a little bit more. So like I generally get the idea of what's being said, but I don't speak that legal mumbo jumbo. So
yeah,
it's just like, make sure you're working with someone that's taking care of you really well. And then most of the time you can do all that stuff on your own. Like unless you're working 60, 70 hours a week, 80 hours a week, which I promise you most people are not doing. Yeah. Then you can absolutely have time to send a couple emails at the end of the night to people, to places that you want to play, send out your new EP to a few labels at the end of the night. Do we want to get a release? Like, you don't need a manager until you have so much coming in that you can't handle it.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard you don't need a manager until you got something to manage, and you don't need a manager until you've got absolutely no time left.
Yeah, it's like,
And I've heard from managers, I won't represent any artist that I am outworking.
Yep.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that's something that's really important to note on the topic of like management and, you know, for producers especially. I think a lot of people have the fairy tale understanding of how it works. And truly what most people miss is that like you have to build the thing to a point that you are already getting that magnetism from people around you. I think a lot of people expect that a manager is like the person that's going to connect them to make the things happen. But the things don't happen until you make them happen yourself, and then you can expand upon that with a manager. And
that's not new. That's not like it just started in the past 10 years. Like that's the way that it's always like. You didn't get, if you watch any documentary about any like band, like even the faker ones where it's like mostly just fun and all the cool stuff. It's like they're building themselves and they're working and they're doing demos and they're in the studio paying for it themselves. And they're doing those little shows and handing out flyers themselves. And like they're building something. And then someone walks into the full room that they're absolutely destroying and is like, oh, these kids got it. And then they introduce themselves and they're like, hey, I see that you were able to fill this 400 person room on your own. Like, let's talk.
Yeah, let's get you into the 800 person room.
Yeah, let's. Yeah,
now that you're crushing it here, I know people that can make the connection to to level you up to the next spot. Not, whoa, you're really killing it in that garage over there. let me turn you into Elton John.
Yeah, yeah.
Get you some star glasses and a sparkle piano.
Rocket Man. Yeah. I mean, that's what people, just like you're saying, Evan, it's just like people think they romanticize the journey, and they think that it's like, they think that this is like someone finds you on SoundCloud and they want to put everything into you, but it's just like not.
Yeah.
At least what I've seen and the people that I've seen around me and the artists that I've booked that have become successful and continue to be successful is they're just absolutely working harder than everybody else.
Yeah. And like, flip the scenario, right? If you're having that fantasy, flip the scenario and just imagine yourself listening to one song on SoundCloud and dedicating your whole life to a different human. Like, it sounds pretty silly when you flip it. I mean, like you were saying, you found somebody on SoundCloud whose music you really like, and you're like, hey, you want to play a show that I'm doing anyways? And it could be you there this particular week. Like,
yeah.
That's not a stretch. Like, a promoter hearing a band they like and be like, yeah, let's put you on a show. Yeah.
Like, I've never even heard you mix, but these 8 songs that you have up are sick. So let's bring you on.
Like, that right there, that's very realistic. You then dedicating your entire rest of your professional life to their success is ridiculous. So, yeah, keep that in mind, folks, when you're on your come up. If you're not outworking the potential managers and getting to the place where they look at you and be like, oh, this is worth my time because it's already rolling and I can make it roll faster, then they're not going to show up. But, yeah. Super dope, man. Thank you so much for being here.
One of the reasons, like, I knew this was going to be a good episode, but like it actually has over delivered. Not only have you set like an example for like how no one path in this industry is the same and like you can smash it in your own lane, but also like I don't think anyone else could do what you do. And we've talked about so many like important soft skills and like other things that are auxiliary to like what people think is important that are actually more important because they happen every day. Like all of this, everything we've talked about today is like A, novel, that like we haven't really talked about pretty much any of this on the podcast, and B, like so everyday useful. Like, I've absolutely loved this entire, what has it been, hour 20 so far?
Yeah,
that's definitely the difference maker, because a lot of people can do the big things and like the they can play a good set to the big crowd that's already going to be excited. But like the opener is way harder sometimes. The opening set's way harder sometimes. And it's staying when you're exhausted and everyone else wants to go home and crash out for the night, but you got another 2 hours of teardown to do. It's like those things and being consistent and the little things that you do, that's what sets people apart. It's like everyone can rock a full crowd, but like, are you going to be there to pick it up at the end of the night?
Woo.
Amen. You have to put in the work. If I've learned one thing from this, is that you got to show up and you got to put in the work and you got to be authentic and honest.
Just be yourself. Like,
Amen. All right. Tell the people how to get a hold of you and find out what you're doing online.
Yeah. So my address. No, I'm just kidding.
Make sure you include the social security number.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Like they introduced them. Robert Rupert, unknown player. Instagram is AKA_unknownplayer. Facebook, it's Rupert. Twitter, I think it's Rupert's Rambles. I don't have a huge online presence. I mostly try to keep stuff through my brands and the things I'm doing, which currently are 5K Music 206, and our cab Instagram's very small. We're probably not gonna keep that one going. Actually, it's just really hard to keep a 6 dudes working together.
Yeah.
But
if people are in Seattle and want to come see one of your cool events? Like which ones are going on and when?
Yeah, so through the summer we have Habitat, which I talked about earlier, and that's our Wednesday night midweek. It's actually 7 p.m. to 11 p.m., which makes it a little bit easier for a Wednesday.
Nice.
And that's through Studio 44. So if you Google Studio 44 Seattle, like that'll get you right there. And then I'll have some things here and there. I guess my personal Instagram, aka _unknownplayer, is the best way to keep track of what I'm doing in Seattle. I have random people hit me up all the time. Hey, what's going on this weekend? If I'm not throwing something, I can definitely point you in the right direction.
Yeah. Amen. All right, man.
Thanks so much for coming on and chatting with us, man. Yeah.
It was a good time. Dope, have a couple beers with the boys.
Amen.
Hell yeah. Hell
yeah. Yeah. And then the way we sign all these out, we'd give them a peace. And a peace among worlds.
Hey.
Woo. Told him it means peace among worlds, Morty. Just fucking do it.
I like it.
All right, humans, thank y'all so much for being here. Appreciate y'all. Hit us up at thehumanmusicpodcast.com to get access to all our links, socials, sound packs, things like that. And support our sponsors, too. Make sure you get that Spice It Up Percussion and Foley Pack. It's got over 2,000 percussion loops and one-shots from me, Luke Rain, and Porch, along with 50 rack instruments. You can also check us out on Dojo TV. It's free producer live stream classes from the producer Dojo Senseis. There's a bunch of dope classes and content over there for free. And we do this show every other week live over there. So you can hop in the chat and ask questions, have fun with us. Tesco's Patreon is also an option. You can get access to his educational content. That's project files, behind-the-scenes footage, access to his Discord, track feedback, private lessons, and more. There's the weekly download where you can learn from Ill Gates and his private weekly group lessons and get access to over 250 more episodes in the archive just for $20 a month. And guest practices where you can learn from Seth Drake at the Approach Institute. He's the best engineer we know, and your first class is free. The song of the week you're hearing behind me is my tune that I did with Porch called Spice It Up. It showcases a lot of the sounds from that percussion and Foley pack that we did. You can find the links to all that down below in our episode notes. And you can check us out on the Song of the Week Spotify playlist. There's a link to that too. Till next week, though, peace. Peace among worlds.